Have you ever had a great idea for a product or event, but didn't have a source of funding to make it a reality? Well, today we're going to find out about the world of crowdfunding and what the possibilities are. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Paul Hedges was for many years the Information Technology Director at Wisconsin Historical Society. He's now the Emerging Technologies Archivist in the Society's Library and Archives Division. He also consults with small businesses, nonprofits, and churches to help them plan for and manage their web presence, and we're very happy to have him back with us today to offer advice and to answer your computer questions. Paul, great to see you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Well, I know that you're quite interested in this, so it was a good topic to cover, and I think a lot of us have heard about crowdfunding, things like Kickstarter programs. It's been around for a while, but I think the details of it are still something of a mystery for a lot of us. What do we mean, kind of at its most basic level, by crowdfunding?
So crowdfunding is essentially the, well, like it says, it's using, leveraging or using the crowd, many people, to help fund specific projects. Typically, crowdfunding comes, I think, from the idea of crowdsourcing or just the crowd on the internet that allows for opportunities to get like-minded people together who are interested in a particular topic or something, and to bring that group together who is passionate about that and to help fund it or to provide help to accomplish whatever that goal is.
And crowdsourcing is bringing a lot of people together to create or to share information. Crowdfunding is bringing a lot of people together who no one of those people probably could be an angel investor and cover the whole thing. But it's kind of like grassroots fundraising.
Yes. I mean, one way to think about it is if people are familiar with Wikipedia, Wikipedia is really a crowdsourced online encyclopedia. Again, takes the knowledge and expertise of many people and brings them together to help keep Wikipedia updated. With crowdfunding, what you typically see is the ability to bring, again, those people together around a certain topic, I would say more of a goal. And there are various types of crowdfunding as well. So
yeah, what are the, are there kind of different categories of crowdfunding?
Yeah, so there is actually, I think of it as three primary ones. One is where, when you think of Kickstarter, where there are actually rewards. So you fund something, and by funding at a certain dollar amount, you're going to get something back as the result of that.
Which might be?
Well, it depends on the goal of the project. So think of it as, if the goal of a project is for a small independent movie maker to create a small documentary, that you may pay $2 just to support the effort with no reward back, $25 for maybe a digital download of the movie, $50 for a DVD, $100 for a Blu-ray HD plus a download. And some of those will even go up to thousands of dollars for things such as associate producer credits and those types of things.
Wow.
So you can see a wide variety of rewards that come from that. The other is typically, which is relatively new, and there's been some new legislation on this, is actually crowdfunding where you get equity in a company.
Hmm.
So in essence, it's like the ability of a small company who says we want to sell stock or we want to start this company. This is one area I'm not particularly familiar with, but essentially you can buy equity or stock in a particular startup.
So it sounds a little bit like they're taking a very standard long-time practice of selling stock, but using the emerging technology.
Exactly.
To make it happen.
Exactly. And again, around the idea of those interested parties, you know, using the interest of the crowd wherever they may be. And this is a worldwide effort as well. This is not just a U.S. Effort. You'll find projects on Kickstarter that are funded from people all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
The third general crowdfunding area is basically just giving, where there is no reward except for you feeling great about giving to some cause. And you see those can be a wide variety of things. They can be causes that are, in essence, in effort to help somebody accomplish something, such as, and you usually see them related to things such as somebody's in trouble or somebody's had, somebody would like to see something before they pass, mm-hmm.
or they need help with medical bills,
those kinds of things. You see those. There are also those giving, of course, to nonprofits and those types of things, specific fundraising goals. And then others, which maybe is considered a fourth, is just a online tool that allows for people to put their money together for a specific project just for them. So, for example, if my family and I want to rent a boat and go hang out on Lake Mead for a couple of weeks.
Just for example.
which we've always talked about, is would be great to get the extended family together for something like that. Since we have to rent that boat, we need to pay for it. One way to get those funds together easily is to use there's something called Tilt or Crowd Tilt, where you can go on and say, okay, this is for this thing. We need to raise $6,000. Everybody put your money in. So it's an easier way to get the money together than...
It's more of a mechanism in that way.
Right. It's more of a tool to just pull money together.
So are any... You explained, especially on the third and fourth types, that they're more for individuals or maybe a family or something like that. But when we're talking about the projects that, someone is trying to raise funds for, are there particular types of projects that are especially well suited to things like Kickstarter or Indiegogo?
I think that typically what you see in Kickstarter are those projects where you have somebody who's creating something, who needs some funds to actually do that creation, to create that product. And that product can be a wide variety of things. It can be, as I mentioned, it could be a movie. One of the largest Kickstarter projects was to create a sequel for the Veronica Mars TV show, or a full-length feature. That was funded fully. I think I wrote it down here, around $5.7 million was raised for that particular movie.
Which was interesting because they had shopped that around to studios, right?
Right.
And didn't get any nibbles, but they knew that they had this big fan base out there.
Certainly.
That was really upset when the series got canceled. And so they went to the crowd. I think it shocked everybody.
And I think that there have been specific projects like that have shown the power and the value of this. You'll also see manufacturing products created. It seems to me one of the more popular iterative fundraising projects I've seen are 3D printers. We're seeing, actually, if you follow Kickstarter and go back in their history, you can see early 3D printers being developed that were fairly raw machines, that very experimental. To now, I think one of the more popular projects is a 3D printer at your desk, which is highly refined. So you see that I think it'd be interesting to know is what role did crowdfunding play in actually the ability to experiment with iterating through the development of those types of products.
Going from a prototype of something that's not going to be on everybody's desk to something that someday we might all have access to.
Right. So other products, smartwatches, we know that the Pebble smartwatch was one of the largest funded Kickstarter projects.
So I always think of those as like Dick Tracy watches.
Yeah.
Yep. Paul just showed me his. So it's basically like a smartphone, but on a watch.
Yeah.
On
so essentially what it is your watch is connected to your phone through Bluetooth. And so it tells me things such as who's texting me and stuff. It's a particularly odd experience to look at your watch when you get a text. But that particular Kickstarter showed commercial enterprises like Apple and Samsung and others that there is there's a group of people out there who will buy these.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so essentially these entrepreneurs were able to go to a fairly large, demonstrate a large base of interested people.
So in a way, it's also market research.
Oh, yes, very much so. And of course, it taps into kind of a geek element that's out there on the internet that who's willing to invest in those types of things. You know, and it's, you know, the range is, like I said, it's creative. We've seen books. We see musicians who want to fund album recordings. We see artists who want to put on artist events. I've even seen small historical societies or libraries use Kickstarter as a way to fund certain things such as processing collections. Hmm. Being able to say, hey, we want to digitize this collection and make it available online. And what you'll get out of it is maybe we'll do a commemorative book print and we'll send it to you as mm-hmm. part of that. So it is a wide variety of projects. But in the rewards category of crowdfunding, what's really important is that they are able to come back and give me, who's invested or in that, the reward that they've promised. And mm-hmm. I think that has been particularly frustrating at times for some people when Kickstarters or Indiegogos or those crowdfunding projects maybe don't deliver what they had promised. And so there's been some criticism of that as well.
We're talking with Paul Hedges right now about crowdfunding of projects, getting the ins and outs of that exciting and new area of using the internet to bring people together for funding projects. We'll also be covering your general computer support questions. You can call 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post a question or comment on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. Justin Williams, our on-air producer today, will get those to us. So, Paul, who decides what projects can be listed on a particular, say, on Kickstarter?
So actually, Kickstarter has specific rules, but there are certain types of projects that they may not allow. I think that they tend to throw out projects that maybe are obscene or just kind of not for the general public. Otherwise, it's open to any project. The key is that with Kickstarter or with Indiegogo, you are providing a reward for that pledge amount.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, what's important is whoever does that project, creates that project, explains what it is they're creating, describes the kind of the value that they're bringing and what I as a funder is bringing to help make this mm-hmm. project happen, and then explaining the risks. That is always really important. I've certainly not funded certain projects because at the risks level, it talks about the person's never done this before or they haven't found a manufacturer mm-hmm. yet. And so I tend to wait on those things.
And so a goal is set, let's say $5,000 for a project. What happens if that goal is not met?
It typically depends. It's generally the same, which is that there's a time limit. There's a minimum goal amount to be raised. If they do not raise the amount by the time the project expires, then it's not funded. And the people who committed funds to it, they're not charged for that.
So you're basically making a pledge saying,
yes,
I will give this amount if you meet your minimum goal. And if that goal isn't met, then
right,
nothing happens.
With Kickstarter specifically, when I pledge $25, they actually use Amazon's payment service. It then asks me to authorize my credit card through the Amazon payment services as my pledge. And then when it expires, there's a 14-day window where the person who runs the project waits until they get their funding, and then they're able to transfer the funds from Amazon to their bank account.
Okay.
You know, it's an interesting sense of risk at times, but I told you earlier, I just looked at the list of Kickstarter projects I funded in the last 4 years, and I've actually funded 36 projects.
Wow.
And it's a variety of music, films, short documentary films, some software, and some technology. I'm looking here. And some camera items.
Mm-hmm. So really kind of all the things that you're most passionate about.
Yes, exactly. So a new camera strap for $30 that's going to come out and be $100. I can actually get it at a lower price, be one of the first to do it. And another part of this, which I think draws people in, is that part of crowdfunding and crowdsourcing is really feeling like you're part of a community.
Right.
And with crowdfunding, what you get is a two-way conversation between me, the funder, and the creator. Mm-hmm. And so I've had email messages and chats with various developers, creators, depending on how much they're able to make themselves available to us, and feel like I can comment on the quality of their product. We've even had times where they've modified product, not based on my specific suggestion, but basically on the suggestions of the crowd as you go through. So it is.
So it's really collaborative beyond the fundraising aspect.
Oh, yes, very much so. And I think that's what is appealing to me as a funder as well.
I think one of the most interesting stories in the crowdfunding arena and for fans of public broadcasting, especially interesting, is that LeVar Burton wanted to revive Reading Rainbow. And he had, after the television show had stopped, he had continued it in various ways, but he really wanted to bring Reading Rainbow into classrooms. And so set $1 million goal, I believe, that was met in 11 hours.
Yes, yes. And I think closed it around,
I think it was 5.4.
Yeah, 5 million.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and in that case, they are creating a product again, and some of it is various phone apps or iPad apps and or written material, and that's great. I think that's amazing, and you see that all over the place. You see that not only in Kickstarter but in Indiegogo and some of these others. People who are really excited and passionate about that going in and saying, wow, I remember that. I'd like to help support that.
And just looking at an article here about that, they say that the Reading Rainbow Kickstarter project had the most number of donors for a single project. They came in at 105, almost 106,000 donors. So
yes.
So that really is, that's a crowd.
It is really, it is. And a crowd who, again, is willing to support at various levels. You may find somebody who is really engaged and wants to use this actually as a business opportunity themselves, and may pledge $4,000 to become an associate producer with the ability to engage more closely with the development of that project. For certain technology projects, often you can pay more to get an early beta version of something and then be able to provide feedback. So it's that interaction during that process. At the same time, you talk about, you know, Reading Rainbow and these others. One project, a Kickstarter that just recently got a lot of press, was the guy who wanted to get Kickstarter funding to make potato salad. You know, it, and in the end, I think he wanted to raise $50. He raised $55,000. Now,
I had a friend who was trying to raise funds for a book at the same time as the potato salad guy, and it was a little disheartening.
Well, of course, right? Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't? And, you know, so part of that is, again, I think there's a lot of people out on the internet who kind of got the joke that it is kind of making in some ways fun of crowdfunding, fun of, you know, a joke of crowdfunding. But at the same time, the in many ways, it was kind of a parody of crowdfunding itself. This, the person who did a really great video, which is really important for crowdfunding, is to help people understand why you're doing it. Well, so he's sitting here at this, in this video, talking about how important it is to experiment and to new horizons. And, you know,
potato salad.
Using all these buzzwords and saying, so I would like to make some potato salad. Very fascinating. And in the end, what I also thought was really great is he recognized he received a huge amount of money. He's using a large chunk of that to rent a hall, and he's inviting everybody who funded to watch him make the potato salad. So he's, you know, it's not as though he's just kind of running away from this laughing. He's going, wow, this is kind of crazy. I'm actually going to continue this and make this into a crowd experience, a real life crowd experience, which I think is really great.
Moving it from the internet to real life.
Of course.
We are talking with Paul Hedges today about crowdfunding, but also your computer questions. What's going on with your computer? Do you need help with something? Or maybe you have tried a Kickstarter or Indiegogo campaign, or maybe you've helped fund one. We'd love to hear about that as well. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. But right now we are talking with Paul Hedges from the Wisconsin Historical Society about your computer issues. And Paul, let's go right to the phone. We have Jean, who's been waiting for a bit, from Mercer. Let's go there. Hi, Jean.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I have a Dell Inspiron 580, and I just started having trouble with it yesterday. When I turn it on, the power light comes on, the monitor starts up, and then nothing happens. After a couple tries, I got it to come on yesterday. This morning, it took at least 5 tries before it started up. Do you have any idea about what might be happening?
So typically with... If you had called, you know, if you had somebody come in and take a look at it, there are a couple of things to check first. One is to always check the most likely obvious possible problems. One would be making sure that the cables are connected between your computer and the monitor. All right, you know, clearly you've seen it come on, so it's not a power issue. But making sure that cable between the computer and the monitor is well seated. I would suggest maybe unplugging it while everything is off and plugging it back in and seeing if that has any effect. Even sometimes jiggling the wire near the connector, there could be something that could have come loose. If you're not seeing any obvious thing there, then you have a couple of other possible ways to look at this. One is that it's possible that the video card might be starting to fail, and so having somebody look at the video card. The other would be to, can you tell me what operating system you're running?
Windows 7.
Okay, well, good news. So you're running a current operating system. So I'm trying to think here. Could you describe for me when it has worked? Are you seeing any messages on the screen, or does it just show up as the desktop show up?
I have occasionally had the message, something about something not enabled. I can't think of it right now.
Okay.
Error, enabled exception.
Okay.
Something like that. I'm sorry, I can't remember exactly.
That's okay. So when that comes up again, go ahead and write it down, because it's very likely that there's some form of software. It could be just a software driver problem. I can't give you the specific information right now, the steps, but what I would suggest is once you have your, if you can bring up the screen again, is to go through the process of what's called a system restore, which allows you to go back to a previous version or iteration of your operating system. What possibly happened was that you, through a piece of software that was installed, it may be conflicting with your video software, your video card, and creating a problem. And so if you can get it working again and walk through that system restore to a previous version, then it can help basically remove that software and get you back to an earlier state.
Okay, yes, it is working right now. I'm afraid to turn it off.
I totally understand that.
But I do know how to do system restore, so I will try that.
So that would be the first place to start, and go from there. It's all a matter of troubleshooting, really troubleshooting.
And Okay. And if she writes down that message that she's getting, just even Googling that message,
yes,
will often give you kind of step-by-step.
It's a great suggestion. That's the first place I typically start.
Okay. Thank you very much for your help.
Good luck with that. And let's go back to the phones and Candy in Harvard, Illinois. Hi, Candy.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you today?
Doing well.
Great, thanks.
I actually belong to a form of a group funding program. I belong to NakedWines.com. My husband and I put in $40 a month into an account with them, and they actually take that $40 a month and they distribute it to several small wineries across the country to help fund them so that they can experiment with different kinds of wine making and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And that $40 a month accumulates in our account, even though they're distributing it to other wineries, so that we can go back and they'll recommend different wines for us, and we can then purchase wines through the website from those wineries at 40 to 60% off what somebody else would come in who's not a member and buy wines at.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So it sounds like what you're describing is kind of a mix between a membership program where you put money, you help put money in, and that money is distributed to help fund the wineries, et cetera. But you also get some rewards from that. Is it the discount, or can you also use the money that's accumulating in that account?
We can use the money that's accumulating in that account. But we also get to talk to the winemakers, and we get to talk to the other members who are part of the community. We get to comment on the wines we bought, and based on our comments, the winemakers then take those comments into account as they go back and make adjustments to new vintages that they're processing.
That's really great. I mean, that's really the true sense of crowd, is, you know, to engage you in that process, mm-hmm, and also learn from you, which is really great.
Yeah, and going back to it being market research, like we were saying, too.
Exactly.
Exactly. And one of the cool things with NakedWines.com is that they have meats as well, sort of. They do wine tastings, wine and teas tastings all over the country as well. The winemakers will open their wineries up and invite us to come and enjoy their wines. And it's really a cool experience to be a part of.
It does. Thank you. I'm going to definitely check it out.
And of course, Candy, the question is, are they good wines?
Oh, excellent. Absolutely wonderful. I have only come across one or two that I haven't been happy with.
Wow.
And
excellent.
I've been a member for 18 months.
Wow.
Oh, that's really interesting. Thank you so much. Yes. So yeah, that's and like you said, Paul, it sounds like for Candy being a funder, it's great that there are the recommendations and the discounts, but being able to give that feedback and kind of see your input get put into practice
right. Is
a really important part of that relationship.
Yeah, and also it's open to you to be engaged if you want to, but also not engaged if you don't want to. So those, you know, introverts or people who are really more lurking or around and just wanting to to try the wine. They don't need to engage, but those who really want to have an opportunity. That's great.
Great. Thanks so much for sharing that, Candy. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to the phones and Ron in Milwaukee. Hi, Ron.
Hi there, Paul. How interesting that you, are you still working for the Historical Society with this futuristic technology right there in your hands?
I do work at the Historical Society, I do work on a variety of tech projects.
Including emerging technologies, so very appropriate.
Yes, it's great.
I think that's a great a combination there, and I'm proud of Wisconsin's Historical Society.
Thank you.
For not just being historical. so I have a documentary that I've been working on for 30 years. It's about my son with disabilities, but what I want to know is the audience out there, not the audience, but the constituency, do they tend to be interested in adding social value, social change documentaries for the moral and emotional reward that it brings? Is there a large funding group there that has an affinity?
Yeah, it's really a great question. I would say yes. One of the challenges with any crowdfunding project is how large of a crowd can you gather? One example is a while back, California was planning to close a large number of national parks, not national parks, but state-run parks. And so a person wanted to create a documentary where they actually were funded to drive around California to those parks that were closing and do a beautiful, picturesque documentary and talk to some people about the impact of closing those. It had some impact on maybe closing not all of them, but they still had to close a chunk. But people who loved the parks became engaged and it was funded. I've also seen projects where people who are interested in things such as organic farming or community supported agriculture, those types of things, and being able to get enough people together to fund those. A really critical part that I've seen with the crowdfunding projects is that once you put it up there, really the hard work begins. And that is to go out and to not only tell a compelling story when you've created the project, but to use social media and to try to get local news or whatever, basically market that project so that you can reach that crowd that may be interested in that particular topic. That is really an interesting challenge. I think there's been about 66,000 successfully funded Kickstarter projects, but just as many that have not gone anywhere because either the project didn't connect essentially with a large enough number of people to fund it.
And not necessarily saying that it wasn't just as high quality.
Exactly.
As the potato salad guy, for instance.
Right.
But that, you know, you have to make people aware that it's there. And so when you talk about social media, is a lot of that kind of, you know, the digital equivalent of word of mouth, Paul, where you're telling your friends and asking them to pass it along and, you know, kind of having the ripples go farther?
Certainly. I think that one of the things that news, of course, loves to talk about is things that other people are talking about. So part of that is to get a good sense of who is your base, moving from that base to a larger group of people, being creative about getting the word out, and using as many venues as you can. But again, it's not just about you should fund this because I think it's great, but being able to tell a really good story, how, you know, make me feel as though I'm able to personally engage and, you know, get some value out of that, even if it's to just support something that I'm interested in or a cause that I'm particularly has an affinity to me.
All right. Good luck with that, Ron. And let's go next to Steve, also in Milwaukee. Hi, Steve.
Well, hello.
Hi.
I spent decades taking care of an elderly mother, so this whole e-revolution has passed me by. And so I'm wondering at this point whether there is a program for seniors of limited means to help them purchase a computer and then help them operate it. Would you might know of one in the Milwaukee area?
You know, I think, Steve, we're going to probably have to take that question and do a little more research. I'm almost certain that there is, that one of the first places I would suggest checking would be the local library.
Especially for classes, I think.
Also, if there are some, maybe a local senior center, going there, even going into, if you've got a local community college in the area, is to walk in and say, hey, I'm interested in doing this. What can you do for me?
Mm-hmm.
Buying a computer, that can be a little bit more of a challenge. But so here's, you know, let's use crowdfunding as an example. Get somebody to help you create a crowdfunded project or something like that, and say, I'm looking to raise, you know, I'm a senior and I'm interested in learning about how to use my use computers, and put a goal together that maybe you'd like to create a website someday or run a blog or something like that. Mm-hmm. But you need to start by actually getting a computer, and mm-hmm. so you need to maybe raise, I'd say to put it in a comfortable range, put it, you know, maybe you need to raise $2,000. It could be as low as $1,000, certainly, and even $500, and start somewhere, and then start talking with your friends and passing around, mm-hmm. saying, I'm looking to raise this money. I have this goal, and go mm-hmm. and go for it. But I think a good place to start would be local library, senior centers.
Senior centers might really know if there are other nonprofits that refurbish computers and provide them to, say, schools or seniors. And also the local United Way generally will have a sense of who's doing what.
I think that's great. Also, local computer clubs, while you may be new at this, walking into a computer club and saying, I'm interested, please somebody help me. I think most computer people who are interested in that, in computers themselves, love to share that knowledge. And so I think there's an opportunity there.
Good luck with that, Steve. And we'll want to hear an update when you've got your computer and you're up and running.
That'd be great.
You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Talking with Paul Hedges of the Wisconsin Historical Society about all things computer and tech related. Something going on with your computer that you aren't sure is good or bad or in between? He'll be happy to help. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So glad you're with us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller and talking with Paul Hedges. For many years, Paul was the Information Technology Director at the Wisconsin Historical Society. He's now the Emerging Technologies Archivist in the Society's Library and Archives Division, working on digital and audiovisual collections and projects. And he also consults with small businesses, nonprofits, and churches to help them plan for and manage their web presence. And we welcome calls about what's going on with your computer or specifically about crowdfunding, since we've been talking quite a bit about that. You can call 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org or post a question or comment on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. And Mueller is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Well, Paul, we've talked about a range of crowdfunding ideas, but, you know, are there any kind of cautionary tales of projects that didn't go well for either the producer or the people funding it?
Certainly, and I think that's where we see news stories typically that where people say it's not all great. This is not all. There is the possibility of fraud, and when problems occur, companies like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, they do typically step up and get involved. A key thing to consider is that both Kickstarter and Indiegogo, they do not provide refunds. Mm. So for example, if I provide $50 for a DVD, that DVD never shows up. I can't go back to Kickstarter and say, "Where's my $50?" It's a contractual arrangement between the producer of the product and myself. Typically what you see is some frustration around a couple of things. Delays in delivering a product typically are common. And the reason for that is, I think one of the appeals specifically for Kickstarter is that you, and for me, is that I'm helping a small business owner or an entrepreneur typically create something that's never been created before. And so while they may have some experience in creating that product, there's risks involved. And so most of the time when I've had problems with a Kickstarter, it's typically just been delayed. Mm. I think the worst...
So instead of it arriving August 1st, it arrives September 30th.
And in fact, I'm waiting for a book that I funded 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It's actually a lovely little children's book that I thought was really great idea. I funded it to get several copies so I could hand around to nieces and nephews. And unfortunately, my nieces and nephews are now getting old enough that I won't be able to give it to them.
You can save it for the next generation.
so the author has continued to come back and essentially say, well, this was funded so well. I got a lot of interest from a formal publisher. I've given the rights to this to the publisher, and the publishing process through them is going to take much longer than if I had done it myself.
So basically they were looking for funding to self-publish, but ended up being able to get a publisher.
So in the end, in some ways I feel as though the project was hijacked. And I know I will eventually get it, and there's still conversation about this project, people saying, so where's it at, and asking for feedback mm-hmm. or some response from the author. But typically what I see is maybe a message that says, well, you know, we had said we're going to have it out in August, but it's really going to be November. Here are the reasons for the delay. And 90% of the people say, hey, thanks for letting us know. We're looking forward to seeing the final product. And typically the reasons for that are legit.
Mm-hmm.
There have also been criticisms about projects where maybe the funds are going to things other than producing the product. And I think, again, that's something I'm not particularly interested in getting into and knowing about. As long as they're delivering what they said they would deliver mm-hmm. to me, and I feel that the value of what I paid for what I'm getting is reasonable, then I'm okay with if they're going to use it to fly to Bermuda or something. I'm that's an example. I've never had that happen. But some people can be critical about that.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like for you, at least, as someone who participates in these crowdfunding efforts, that for you, you're really thinking of it as a purchase mm-hmm. in a lot of those situations.
Certainly.
So basically you're saying, okay, this is what they're offering. You know, it's a good product or it's a good project, but really you're thinking of, I'm willing to give them this much money for this item.
Exactly. I think the one example is where I provided funds for a artist to essentially pay for them to go on tour and pay for somebody to record all of their concerts on the tour. And I got back all of the audio in digital form at the end of that. So while I could not go to those concerts, I had an opportunity to hear them. Mm-hmm.
Have that experience.
And have that experience and have a copy of each of those concert experiences, even though I couldn't go.
Mm-hmm.
And so it certainly was much less than a $150 ticket to a, you know, to a concert.
Right, and getting there.
And getting there and all
and
of those things. But at the same time, you know, I do enjoy the experience, but to be able to spend $40 for something that I can listen to over and over again is really great.
Let's go back to the phones and EJ in Viola. Hi, EJ.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I'm EJ Callanan, and I'm the general manager of Shepherd's Hard Cider in Viola, Wisconsin. And we just launched a Indiegogo campaign this morning.
Great.
And I've been blown away so far. We've already raised over $1,100.
Yeah.
And I was just hoping to get your advice on what we can do to keep the momentum going.
Yeah, that's really great. So, I'm sure I have marketing friends who will know much more about this than I do, but as a consumer, and actually I'm going to check this out because I'm a big fan of hard cider, is to actively engage with your funders as often as possible. If somebody, for example, I heard about it from a friend and checked out the website, checked out the Indiegogo. If I essentially saw information there and did not see your company engaged with the funders in some way and you know, kind of regular updates of, hey, thanks, we're at 40%, you know, let's keep the ball rolling, then that actually is appealing to me personally. And so it gets me interested more knowing that, not only am I getting a product, but I'm able to engage with the creators of that product. Also, make sure to hit all of your marketing outlets that are not digital. So the local news, the what I call the hobby websites, which is essentially if there are websites out there that talk about hard cider or that type of product, is to send an email to them saying, hey, we just launched this. If you want to talk to us about doing a news story about this cool funding project, but essentially get it out there so that those people who enjoy hard cider or are looking for something special will see it wherever mm-hmm. they are. I think that's really important.
And just out of curiosity, how did you set the goal for your Kickstarter campaign? And, you know, like, what did you do to get ready for it launching this morning?
Well, we set a goal for $20,000, and that'll let us get the equipment that we need to boost production to keep up with demand. Mm. We found a great article by on a blog called The 4-Hour. Tim Ferriss's guy, he's author of The 4-Hour Workweek.
Yep.
And there's a fantastic article about hacking Kickstarter that would raise $100,000 in 10 days, had written. And so we took stuff off of that. They had a big team, though, of people that are very familiar with making websites and landing pages and fancy videos and all of that that we don't really have. So we sort of took their themes and, you know, let people know ahead of time that we could count on to, you know, even donate a little bit, just so that when somebody comes and sees, oh, they've only been going for 6 hours and they already have $1,000, that lends you credibility.
Sure.
And other than that, just going for it, knowing that we don't know what we're doing, but if we throw a bunch of balls up in the air, it's okay if we drop most of them, because hopefully we can keep the rest going.
Yeah, and I think really the important thing is have you set a 30-day timeline, a 10-day? What's your expiration for the project?
Exactly, 30 days.
30 days. So, you know, really for 30 days, you're committing to daily engagement on the site, constantly talking about it, talking not only with friends, but whoever you advertise with and other opportunities, let the word out. You know, if you haven't, I know it's kind of, it's a little tough to do, but having a good video seems to be really important for these fundraising opportunities, because people, of course, respond to that visual, emotional response of seeing a video. And so I'm sure you probably live in, you know, a beautiful part of the country, and you have trees, and you have farmland, and you have a production facility, and all of those things. And even if it's just showing where you're at and what you do and your product, or even testimonials, you know, mm-hmm. people who are saying, "Well, you know, this is great stuff." Anything to help get across the sense of what people are giving their money for.
Right.
Is really helpful.
Well, keep us posted on that, EJ. We'd love to hear how you do.
Thank you very much. The name of the campaign, it's on Indiegogo, is Strong Ecology and Economy Through Strong Drink. I hope that's okay for me to just
sure.
give that little plug.
Sure.
And also, I wanted to say that, you know, something Paul said is really important. Go for your target audiences. You know, anyone doing this, I think people make the mistake of thinking, oh, if we could just get into the New York Times. Well, if you're doing something in a very specific part of Wisconsin, go for that local media. Thanks for that call, EJ. Paul Hedges will be with us up until 12:30 today, talking about computer issues, helping you with your computer problems. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Back after the news. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Computers and all the gadgets that we rely on to connect with the world through the internet have become a part of daily life at home and at work. They can certainly be great tools until they're not working, and then you're stuck. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. For many years, Paul Hedges was the Information Technology Director at Wisconsin Historical Society. He's now the Emerging Technologies Archivist in the Society's Library and Archives Division, and he also consults with small businesses, nonprofits, and churches to help them plan for and manage their web presence. Paul, thanks again for spending time with us today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
And let's welcome in our listeners to become callers. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email at talk@wpr.org or post a question or comment on our Facebook page. And Chrissy on Facebook said, I have some product ideas that I'd like to get manufactured. Are there best practices to follow to get ideas funded through crowdfunding?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think typically the first thing to understand about the crowdfunding is that you will need to have worked through before you create a project to fundraise. Is you'll need to have a really good plan in place. Typically, is to have a product well designed in advance, have a business plan, have something that. That you know can actually be created, even though there may be delays, and maybe have a local manufacturing partner or have identified a manufacturing partner in another country where you know that you can actually create that product. I think that's the difference between projects that have an idea. I'd like to maybe create this. I would look at that as maybe a risky project because it's more of an idea than actually a doable product. Mm-hmm. Whereas others, I know, I've seen that they've maybe created products before. That helps me feel a little more comfortable.
So they have a track record.
They have a track record. I'm just trying to think of the question here of, are there things... that were maybe more fundable or certain ideas. What I would suggest is pick one, take it down the path a ways and do some thinking about it, see if you can actually create a prototype. Very often what I see is they'll demonstrate a prototype and say, we've gotten this far and it's functioning, or here, you know, we've been using this early prototype version for a couple of months and it works great. We just need help essentially buying the material and putting it into full production so we can create large amounts.
Mm-hmm.
And being then able to take that, and that, those tend to be really popular, is to say, hey, this person has a demonstrable product that they've already worked with. Let's help that person actually create 20,000 mm-hmm. of them.
So it seems like maybe there's a different... People maybe look at projects through a different lens. If it's a creative project, like you said, you know, a new album or a music festival or a documentary, whereas if it's an actual product, a something that's really a business-based model, people are going to expect a business plan, a real sense that this product is going to be marketable.
Yes. Well, and I'm not sure about necessarily marketable beyond that particular product or project, but definitely marketable to a large enough number of people so that you can create that. So here's a good example. There was two men in Chicago who clearly are self-starters. They're machinists. And they came up with an interesting idea for a letter opener. And the letter opener was designed really great. It was artistically very nice. I'm not really in the market for another letter opener, but these guys clearly were using this as a jumpstart to get experience in larger manufacturing. Mm. It helped give them a leg up, and I was essentially paying $20 for something to help them get enough orders so that they could learn and do this. And I got something back, but I also got out of that the satisfaction that I helped these two self-starters actually get experience working with the machinery and developing a product mm-hmm. and shipping it. So this was their first actual product. Mm-hmm. Since then, they've put up three or four other Kickstarters, and each product continues to be a higher level of sophistication. You know, they're on their way. So it feels good to be part of that.
Talking with Paul Hedges about crowdfunding, but also about any computer issues you might having, the number to join in is 800-642-1234, and Harold in Superior has a question for you, Paul, so let's go there. Hi, Harold.
Well, hello. I bought a gateway, which is now owned by Acer, which confuses issues a bit. It's a gateway Acer desktop. I bought this about last August, and it had Windows 8.1 on it, or 8.8. And which I've upgraded to 8.1, and I'm not sure if it was during an automatic update to the newest version of Windows or what, but I turned my computer on and it just didn't work. And I'm quite conversant on computers. I've fought these things for 32 years and or more, but this one's got me stumped, and I don't know if it's this new EUFI, if I've got the right acronym there, kind of a built-in protection to make it harder yet to even get at your own material or your own disks and stuff. If it's that, or I can't even seem to boot to most boot CDs in my DVD drive, excepting if I have one of my backup external USB drives in and things like that. It's just strange.
Yeah.
It's a new scenario.
All right, let's see what Paul has to say.
Yeah, good. So when you turn it on, you see nothing. You do have power, but you do not see anything on the screen.
Well, I see various things, and in fact, I've got into a repair thing and I couldn't, roll back your drivers. That didn't work. Automatic repair didn't work.
Mm.
And,
yeah.
I just freshly imaged the drive, and I can't seem to get that. I'm quite green at that. I still have a bunch to learn, but I was hoping I could just plug my USB in there and it would, because it was an image, it would boot to that, but it doesn't.
Okay, let's see what Paul thinks for our next step.
So I think, I mean, it sounds to me like you have some form of either corruption or possibly, I mean, it could have be a variety of things, but I think what you need to do is be able to rule out things such as a hard drive corruption or some form of malware. I think for you going through and trying to to boot off of different, seat repair CDs, et cetera, is certainly one option and where I would start. And it doesn't sound like that's working. And you've even done some rollbacks and tried to repair from the hard drive. So, my guess is that you probably need to have somebody, look at this, professionally look at this. What I would suggest is get any important information you have off of the hard drive, if that's possible, or make sure you have a recent backup. Another option would be to simply re-image the hard drive itself and reinstall the operating system.
When you say re-image the hard drive, what do you mean?
Well, essentially, it's like starting over like you had a fresh new computer. So hopefully the computer came with either a repair partition on it or a set of CDs or DVDs that lets you put it in and then say, restore this computer like I just bought it.
Is that like a factory reset?
It would be like a factory reinstall of the operating system. The downside of that is very likely that it can reformat your hard drive. But sometimes what it will do is just reinstall the operating system and leave the rest of the files alone. But without actually looking at it, I would say you've already tried a variety of things, and to really get somebody to sit down and look at it, pay somebody to look at it.
Yeah. All right. Well, it sounds, Harold, like you did everything you could on your own, and time to bring in the troops. Let's go next to Mike in Madison. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi.
Excuse me. Hi. I'm looking for, I'm not really looking for a marketing an idea or making money or anything, but rather, does your guest know of any ways to use the internet to garner support to encourage our federal and state politicians to address and adopt legislation that provides energy conservation through, like, solar energy, driving less, flying less, and promoting that as a bill?
So more of an advocacy kind of approach than crowdfunding, per se.
Right. Yeah,
does that tie in with this at all?
Yeah, it's a great question. Typically, I think crowdfunding is really about raising funds for a particular project. So if really what this is about is to raise awareness and get groups of people to get engaged in particular ideas and other projects, it makes me think of, and I haven't used it, but I know that there's something on White House.
Whitehouse.gov has something, and change.org.
And change.org, where people can post an effort, an idea, such as I think that we should do this.
It's often expressed in the form of a petition.
Right. And then people will vote on it, and those with the promise, I believe, from the White House that they will, for those that are over a certain amount or the most popular ones, will be considered to actually act on. I'm not as familiar with those, but I know that they're out there. I can't really say exactly how effective they are. I think clearly if the people who are on the action end of that need to be able to feel that there is something actionable and something that is within some realm of reality. So looking for those kinds of sites, you know, similar to that would be where I would start. Mm-hmm. You know, do a Google of issue related crowd,
right? Issue advocacy,
you know, advocacy
website,
those types of things. But crowdfunding really is about raising money for a particular effort. So one way would be to say, we have a particular effort, let's say community-supported agriculture. We want to put together some brochures or do some advocacy, and so we're going to pay to create some product. Mm-hmm. That would be more of a crowdfunding.
Or we want to fund a lobby day to bring farmers to
capital
or
something. Even pay a lobbyist to do certain things. Those are fundable product. Mm-hmm. Projects.
Well, and actually Mike was talking about political, environmental ideas, and Bonnie on Facebook wrote that there's a Kickstarter project called Hometown Habitat. It was filmed recently in Wisconsin, including the Green Bay and Appleton area. It's a 90-minute environmental education documentary focused on showing how and why native plants are critical to the survival and vitality of local ecosystems. And she says the producer, Catherine Zimmerman, visited the Wild Ones National Center in Neenah. The Wild Ones is a native plant organization, as well as backyards in the Green Bay Appleton area. And she's still raising funds on Kickstarter. So it sounds like that's kind of that second step that you were talking about, Paul, like identifying the issue and getting the word out, but then having something more concrete.
Yes. And being able to take this and this not only helps those who are already engaged stay engaged but also those who want to use this as education and advocacy to be able to take that documentary and show it in the future. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've seen similar, there are lots of Wisconsin projects out there. You can actually on Kickstarter limit it to a specific geographic area, and there are lots of Madison ones, and actually a couple that I've done, Smart Studios, which closed down, and they're now doing a documentary. And
Smart Studios was a recording studio that had huge name bands and performers coming through to record at.
So essentially, many people think that, you know, grunge, basically Nirvana in the 90s, that sound was originated here at Smart Sound
Butch
Studios.
Fig.
Yeah, Butch.
And so there are, you know, it doesn't have to be like we were talking earlier, you know, think of who your audience is. If you're doing something, maybe Smart Studios would appeal to anyone who's into that type of music across the country. But maybe if you're talking about something much more local, think about those channels to get the word out.
Sure. And I think also establishing realistic financial goals is if what you want to do is you want to learn how to bake apple pies and you are going to basically ship apple pies to a group of people, you might say, well, I only need $500 to do 50 pies. And so setting realistic goals is really important.
Are there other Wisconsin crowdfunding stories that you want to share?
Well, so early on, Chad Vader, which is was a popular YouTube episodic show where they had basically the Darth Vader character as a store manager. That is it's a comedy kind of shorts. Season 4 was a crowdfunded project, and so out of that, essentially, I received a DVD of season 4, and what my money went to was to help them basically shoot season 4 here in Madison. So the company that produces that is based in Madison as well. So there, that again is just kind of a thing I find really interesting. Mm-hmm. is how can I support some local efforts, mm-hmm. And also get something that I find interesting as a reward.
There you go. Let's go back to the phones and Kevin in Madison. Hi, Kevin.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a small business owner. I manufacture candles, and I recently was in the process of redoing my website. I did not have control or much control over my previous website as far as being able to put new content, photographs, or switch up e-commerce. I have since tried to take the reins back by purchasing a template through Volusion, which is a web builder, which kind of sells their products as something where the person, if you don't know code, or if you don't know HTML, this is an easy way to basically create your website. And I found out very quickly that that's not necessarily true at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I purchased a web template, a nice one, in their medium range tier. They give you different tiers. I purchased it. I did maybe a fourth of what I thought I could do, very quickly realized I now need web design help, which is now I have to spend thousands of dollars potentially to get a guy to help me use this web builder, which I should be able to use myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of thinking to myself, did I make a huge mistake? Should I have just gone directly to the web design firm or the web professional to create a custom website? Yes, of course, we all want to save money, but I also wanted to gain an education mm-hmm. on how to make the changes myself so I didn't have to pay a web designer,
sure.
you know, potentially hundreds of dollars for each little individual
sure.
change.
And Kevin, I'm going to stop you there because we only have a couple minutes left, and I know this is something Paul could talk about for hours,
yep.
but just in a minute or two, Paul, what would you recommend for Kevin?
So you have certainly run into one of the biggest challenges is that there are plenty of companies out there who are going to say, all you need to do is buy this software and you can create a perfect website. It reminds me of when PageMaker came out years ago and everybody said that you could now make your own newsletters. It's more than the technical, is also a design element as well. What I would suggest is, and what I essentially use is if you're going to look for a web designer, what you want to do is you want to find somebody who's going to be familiar in a publishing platform such as WordPress or Drupal or Joomla, or even there are some online-only services like Wix, W-I-X, .com, where you can open up a browser and you can create the website right there from the browser. The web designer can help you essentially get the site set up and organize the architecture, you know, what's on the menus and those types of things. It's always good to have somebody who's familiar with the web to help you create a good user experience for your visitors, because if I'm going to buy candles, I want to focus on buying candles and be able to do that easily. Because if you are selling, also there's that store component, which is a challenge. So I would suggest looking for somebody who can help you with that software. Probably would be a good first step since you've already committed to that, and going from there.
And from another time that Paul was on, we talked about this type of issue, and I'll repost that article mm-hmm. about that up on the Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Well, Paul, always a pleasure to have you with
Thank
us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And tomorrow we will learn about preserving foods through drying techniques at 11, and then we'll learn about nutrition for older adults at 11:45. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Thanks for listening.